Welcome to the Hammer Time Radio Show. Yes, I am Maurice, and thank you very much, Bob. Our production engineer today locally is Kent, and welcome, Kent. It's good to have you back with us. I'm transmitting in the A. Handy Man's Haven Radio Studio on the frequency of AM 1030, the voice with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter into the conversation today on our listener hotline, give us a call on 520-790-2040. After we just finished the Prather Point with Mr. Jeff Prather, we'll try to bring your blood pressure back down to a reasonable level, and we'll get your heartbeat functioning in a nice stable format. And we'll continue on with some nuisances that appear around the home, which hopefully most of us do have one. Maybe some people have two or three, depending upon what it happens to be, or you have a boat or an RV or things of that nature. And a lot of these things can apply to all of them that we happen to talk about frequently. So with some basic information, A. Handy Man's Haven in Tucson is located at 1724 South 6th Avenue. That place is a six blocks south of 22nd Street. We're between 27th and 28th Street. When you get to 29th Street, we're back over your right shoulder if you're heading southbound. Our hours of operation in Tucson are from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday, except for specific holidays throughout the year. Our phone number is 520-624-7200. Our Green Valley location, of which many people do not know, but we're excited about that as time goes on. The address is 125 West Calle de los Tiendas. That's surely a mouthful. And then you could add Suite 103 Alpha behind that. Coming off of I-19, you could exit on the Duval Mine Roads and then immediately get into the left-hand lane to pick up the frontage road as you go westbound. And then you proceed southbound and pick up the Duval Mine Road, mainly the south road of Duval Mine Road. There is two of them. They span an arroyo through that area. Again, the address is 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 125 or Alpha, 105 Alpha. The phone number in Green Valley is 520-369-4858. Hours of operation are from about 8:30 in the morning to 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and the days are Monday through Friday. We have a website that's concurrent for both of them, which is www.ahandymanshaven.com. We say A Handy Man Shaven because the URL, the website names do not take commas or apostrophes, so to speak, or the super comma or the upper comma or the apostrophe or the possessiveness or whatever you'd like to call it. So that'll give you some way of getting a hold of us. If the phone is not being answered in Green Valley, it'll automatically revert up to the Tucson, and we'll be able to talk to you from that standpoint. I always like to discuss activities that are going on within A. Handy Man's Haven. And I guess I could say right now, due to all the major activities that are going around the world, as well as the United States and in Tucson, A. Handy Man's Haven is open. We're up. We're operating. We're assisting customers with their needs for cabinetry, doors, etc. We have five companies that we operate with their supply of cabinetries, over 100 different types of styles and constructions that they happen to be. Our doors are the common, which are very low cost. We can go to standardized upgrades, whichever may happen to be, getting into a lot of different wood species. We do have the capability of getting those types of things. We can do special doors upon request also. We've done several of those over the years. A customer wanted a solid red door, So we ended up getting some red laminate. We laminated the door in red, put some double-acting hinges on it for them, and it went between their kitchen and their laundry room. We also did one that where I've talked about this, which is really quite exquisite. The customer themselves had made a stained glass window, wanted installed in a door, an exterior door. So we accomplished that for them from that standpoint. So we can do a lot of different things with doors in order to satisfy your personal request. Our mill shop, which we have about a 4,000 square foot mill shop with a lot of heavy duty equipment, has been very, very busy. With simple add-ons to most of our cabinetry, modifying the cabinets, as well as handling very complex requests. We work with the customer and their desires to develop a smooth, efficient, and a very pleasant kitchen for them upon their request, or laundry room, or work center, or whatever it may happen to be. The other activity that we specialize in is countertops, or our countertops. There are many, many different versions of countertops available. We handle from laminates, which are probably the most simplistic countertops, the material coming out of Formica and Wilson Art, all the way up through the natural stones and including quartzes from several companies throughout the world. We do have one company in the United States, as an example, which is the Cambria Company up in the Northeast. They are family-owned. The very interesting thing about that company, if you happen to research it on the web, is that they happen to be a very prominent dairy farmers throughout the United States. So with a laminate countertop, we can provide you a fully formed laminate countertop. That's with the splash system across the back part of it. We do have all the add-ons, such as finishing the ends for you, with what we call our capping system. We can also provide side splashes when you want to protect your wall structure from that nature. We also have the unique capability of building what we call a seamless, or sometimes it would be a cut-through type counter. And that's without any slice of the counter where it provides a splice or a miter straight through that has to be joined with bolts, and the angles of the counters in a cut like that have to be extremely exact. There is only one major requirement when we do a countertop of that nature. We have to be able to get it in the home. That seems to be a prerequisite for countertops, is that you may want to install this after you expense out this type of a countertop. So it looks like we've come to the end of our first segment here. I'll continue with some of these items immediately after the break. We're transmitting in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show, transmitting in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio. We are on frequency AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter into the hotline by the listener to tell us about what's going on in your do-it-yourselfer world out there, we would truly appreciate that. The frequency for an online conversation would be 520-790-2040. So we're talking a little bit about countertops at the end of the last segment. And just to give you an idea, the laminate countertop, which is really a very, very basic excellent countertop. It's been around since the 1900s, the mid-1900s from that standpoint. It's extremely durable. But anyway, 10 feet of countertop with a fully formed backsplash. Nothing else done to it. That typical type of a countertop would cost you about $90. So you can come down to the store. We could cut that for you at 10 feet or whatever length you happen to be. We do charge by the foot. So the mathematical wizards out there that are listening today, 10 feet for $90, I think that comes up to be something similar to $9 a linear foot. That's the basic cost of a laminate countertop. So keep us in mind for that, and then we can get you pretty well set up with wherever you like to have your countertop, in your home, in your shop, or wherever it may happen to be. The reminder is that a laminate countertop will always be less costly than any other countertop that's available. That includes your natural stone countertops, such as marble, travertine, soapstone, granite, slate, etc. It's extremely reasonable, and any quartz countertop from that standpoint also. I see we have a caller that's entered into the conversation. Andy, good afternoon to you, and we appreciate your phone call. So how may I assist you today?
Yeah, thanks, Maurice. I wanted to ask you a couple questions. The first one, you know how they're making composite deck materials nowadays?
Yes, sir. I knew how they're making composite materials, yes.
Have you ever heard of composite materials that's like a tongue and groove? For like, you know, 1x6 or 1x8 tongue and groove composite materials?
You know, I've never investigated that explicitly. I don't see why they couldn't make it if that is the case. I'd have to explore that. The only times I've seen that in most of the magazines or the trade magazines as well as in the home centers is things like 2x4s, 2x6s used for decking. I don't know whether it would make a tongue and groove or a shiplap from that standpoint. Now, I know shiplap is quite easily manufactured from a personal standpoint if you just happen to have a table saw.
Uh-huh.
And I'm assuming at this time period that the composite material is all the way through and it's not just a surface coating from that standpoint. So that's a very good question. I'd have to research that and see what type of information I can come up with that.
You'd probably be able to research it faster than I could, but if I wanted to research that, what do you think, what sites or what company do you think I should look into, if you know offhand?
Well, that I don't have at the tip of my brain power at the present time.
I
think with the search engines on the web, you can place composite materials maybe listed as tongue and groove or shiplap. I do know that shiplap was quite extensively used years ago in roofing material prior to putting on an asphalt roof. As far as using it in decking or things of that nature, there's always a space in the decking that so water can flow through from that standpoint. So that's a very interesting subject. I'll see what I can find out for you. In the search engines, I would put composite material, dimensional lumber, so to speak, composite, things of that nature, and see how it can come up and see what websites
out.
Are available.
Okay, and then one other question. Last week you were talking about roofs and the different kinds of roofs. Isn't it so that a standing seam metal roof doesn't have any exposed face nailing or screwing?
Well, there's two types. I can pull out the trade magazine I have here, but one does have exposed fasteners from that standpoint. They're normally galvanized type of screws. My latest discussion with various professionals is that screws are the main thing that are used today in order to fasten them down. The other type that is available, there's several joining mechanisms available. The other type is what they could be labeled as a seamless because the seams are sort of hidden, or at least where all the fasteners are. They're happening to hitting with a little, hidden with a little lip.
Yeah.
I forget the direct name of that from that standpoint.
But they get up there and they as they go, as they nail it, I think they crimp it or something.
Well, I don't know the process of installation, or they're even manufactured that way, that where the lip comes out over and slips over a vertical portion, and then there's a flat portion that protects it. That was some of the drawings that I happened to see from that standpoint.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. It sounds like the standing seam roof, which hides the nails or the screws, would be the optimum way to go.
Well, that is a way of going, and I think that would be an excellent process. That is called a standing seam. I just was able to pull the magazine out.
Uh-huh.
The other one is called a through-fastened type metal roofing.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the manufacturers, it's rather interesting, mainly prepare this for commercial installations, whereby they're working with what they call steel purlins, which is nothing more than a steel rafter. You know, in a regular home around Tucson here, most of the, you know, the rafters are 2x6s, 2x8s, or 2x10s, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, wooden, yeah.
They're a wooden type thing. But the standing seam panel can be installed over sheeting, whatever it may happen to be. It is often faster than the modular panels, but slower than the through-fastened panels. The through-fastened panels, you just place them down, you screw them down, and you move on from that standpoint.
Uh-huh.
The fasteners themselves, like I said, are normally of screws. In talking with some contractors and with a manufacturer, doesn't appear to be anybody uses galvanized nails any longer. They use the screws.
Uh-huh.
And the very interesting aspect of that, there is a neoprene seal that goes between the head of the screw, which is probably a hex head type screw. And I also found out that they do not use any sort of mechanized rotation of the screw, be it with air or electricity, that has a torque application attached to it. In other words, you could set so many pounds of torque, and therefore it would embed that appropriately.
Right.
There's so many different aspects. There's been a lot of research done on that. And one company I ended up discussing the situation with, they had a special request that they wanted to make sure everything was torqued the same way. So they went through some analyzation of doing it on steel purlins. And they found out, even on the steel, that they did not have a consistent torque, which gave them the proper compression of the neoprene seal.
Right.
So they sort of threw out that idea, and they said that there's just no way that you could set up a torquing mechanism. I guess if you torqued it all the way down by hand, like we used to do on heads of engines,
uh-huh,
that you could regulate that. But it comes with one of those things. It's a technique, and the individual who does set the screws, whether it's under a standing seam or it happens to be under a through-fasten type thing, you just have to be able to observe how the neoprene seal is being compressed.
Flattens out, yeah.
Flattens out, yes. That's another way of looking at it, Andy, from that standpoint. So.
Well, I appreciate your insight. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome, and I'll do some research on that composite material. That does sound interesting. I did take a look at months ago on shiplap, wood as an example, and there are manufacturers mainly in the Midwest and the East that manufacture that, but then by the time they ship it out, it becomes really highly expensive.
I'll tell you what it is. This fellow did build a rather large deck, and it's underneath, it's an entertainment center, and up above it's a railing with the deck. But he allowed his builders to use just regular 3/4 inch plywood for the top of the deck.
Right.
Well, no doubt it rained on it, and then separating and swelling and this, that, and the other. And he spent hundreds of dollars buying this material to coat that deck, and that didn't do any good. So now we're looking at a way to, you know, perhaps use this. In other words, we don't want the water to pass through. We want it to shed off.
Sure.
And so that's why the composite shiplap or tongue and groove we're thinking. And then we can put another drip edge around that.
Well, you can put a drip edge. And I don't know about the expansion contraction capability of composite material.
Yeah.
I do know a wood, of which most of us are well aware of, especially in southern Arizona here, between the winter when the relative humidity is less, and the summertime when the rains are coming.
Right.
From that standpoint, that homes do expand and contract, and everything expands and contracts on a daily basis. Sometimes
right.
it can go through as many as 20 different iterations of expanding and contracting. And that's one of the difficulties even with the steel roofs, that the sheeting expands and contracts. You know, I'm sort of curious, if he used plywood as the initial sheeting, did he get CDX or marine plywood, or just use regular plywood?
I think it's probably a CDX, so, you know, it's good one side, I guess they call it.
Yeah, the C and D determine the sides, which would be good on one side, and or relatively good on one side, but the X stands for exterior grade. The very interesting thing about that is that I remember doing construction on a home years ago, and CDX at that time period was the sheet goods that you would use, but you could not use that same CDX sheet goods with the exposure in an eave, which in France they call it the covering up the soffit. So if you had a 4-foot overhang, as an example to give you some protection of rain hitting the doors or windows,
right.
whatever it happens to be, that you could not use CDX, which stands for exterior grade, because the glues are different. You basically had to use dimensional lumber in order to accomplish that. And at that time period, this happened to be back in the 60s and 70s, I was able to obtain a shiplap relatively easy in Tucson in order to accomplish that task, because that's what the original roof sheeting, so to speak, was on the major portion of the home.
Yeah.
So a lot of little different things come up as a result of what the International Residential Code requires, of which the city of Tucson and Pima County just finished not too long ago the 2018 IRC, the International Residential Code criteria, with all the amendments. So that's available today.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll keep working at it.
Okay, very good. I'd be interested to see how you solve your difficulty from that standpoint, especially if you can get it done before the raining season starts.
That's what we're hoping for.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate your phone call.
Bye-bye.
We've completed our second segment at this time period. We're transmitting on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk in the A. Henny Manshaven radio studio. And Kent, have fun. Here we are, folks, back in the A. Henny Manshaven radio studio, transmitting on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter into the conversation like Andy just has, please give us a call on 520-790-2040. We're talking about metal roofs again, and it's been a fascinating subject. Last week, we did have a listener by the name of Jerry that called in with some concerns. I would appreciate it very much if he could call in and give our production engineer his phone number, and I'd like to discuss some situations with him after the radio show today, or maybe early next week or so, concerning some information that I've located concerning the metal roofing systems. So, in getting back to the laminate countertops, I want to iterate again that we have 10 feet of laminate countertop with an integrated backsplash available at A Handyman's Haven for $90. That's $90 a linear foot. We even have 12-foot sections available. So we can provide that for you from that standpoint. Other types of things. Some basic rules on countertops, of which we discuss quite frequently down at our stores. And there are some three rules that, guidelines, I should say, that should be adhered to in working on any type of countertop. One of them is, do not place any hot items on the top of the countertop. Whether it's quartz, pardon me one moment. seems as though there are some contagion sitting around here that is affecting me. But anyway, do not place any hot items on any countertops. Use a trivet. The trivet is normally on a metal. It could be a wood trivet from that standpoint that will buffer the countertop as you disperse the heat. A trivet made out of metal is an excellent choice because as you place the hot pot and pan on the metal trivet, the heat will transfer right away to the metal portions of the grate. And the trivet looks just like what's in your oven as an example for a shelf or on your barbecue, et cetera. Except it's called a trivet because it sits on your counter. But the heat will disperse rapidly right along the edge, the diameter of the rods, and go right out at the ends and basically not burn anything from that standpoint. Can I guarantee it? Well, the answer is no, because you can't probably heat it up to such an extent that where it will penetrate right through. So think about that. Nothing hot on any countertop. Do not drag any items across the countertops. A lot of us today are using cast iron pots. They are pretty heavy. Sometimes people will use a cast iron pot that has legs on it. Guess what? That's just like taking a nail and scraping it right across your countertop. You will scratch it from that standpoint. If it's natural stone, the scratches are somewhat difficult to get out, and it does become a concentrated method that has to be used in order to handle a situation like that. I see we do have a phone call, but I'm going to finish the third item here, and then I'll get to that phone call. Do not cut on any countertop. And people say, well, I cut on my countertop. So I ask them to go out and get a nice rock, bring it in, and I'll take their prize knife and slice it right across the rock. Oh, I would never do anything like that. Well, folks, natural stone is nothing more than a rock. So keep these three items in mind, and you'll preserve your countertop for a long period of time. I'd like to enter the conversation now with one of our callers, Charles. Welcome to the A Handyman's.
Are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here. I'm just, I went into a lapse mode here. The A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio on AM 1030. Go ahead, Charles.
Maurice, I was very interested by the comment you made about the world's largest, or the country's largest granite manufacturer being owned by a dairy farm. Is that true?
Basically, and it's not granite manufacturer, it's a quartz manufacturer. Granite is a natural stone, and I haven't been able to talk to the individual that has set up that way of manufacturing granite or soapstone or that, but this happens to be the quartz. It's a Davis family, I believe, out of Minnesota. They have over 15,000 head of cattle, dairy cattle.
Are you worried about any bovine commentary from them?
Nope. Ooh, look at that. No, I'm not worried about that. But the interesting phase of it is that they provide most of their milk products to Kraft Foods. And when they took a look at the plant that became available, they said, this is just like making cheese. And if you've ever seen hand making of cheese, that's pretty much how a quartz is manufactured. So, quartz is not manufactured that way, but the quartz countertops are. Quartz is also a natural product from the earth. So,
Wow, that maybe there's a new brand or new flavor of cheese. You know, the quartz flavored cheese or something. I don't know.
Well, it could be. It could be Longhorns, or it could be Bramers, or I don't know the names of all the other cattle that are available. I should know because my mom and dad used to have cows for milk production. So,
really. All right. Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Appreciate the phone call. That opens up a line for anybody else that would like to call in on 520-790-2040. So we talked about the basic rules of countertops, which I think are highly important. I do know that my wife may not buy this in this case, but I've got a 1970s laminate countertop at home that still functions and works well. And the advantage of that type of countertop, it is antimicrobial. As an example, that means it's non-porous. I don't have to seal it. All you need to do is wipe it down and keep it clean, and everything is going to be in great shape. And if anybody wants to laugh out there, you're welcome to do it. It's a nice Harvest Gold countertop. Those of us of that era remember how prominent and prevalent Harvest Gold was in refrigerators and appliances and everything else that was available. So keep these three things in mind for your countertops, folks. Do not place any hot items on them, do not drag anything across them, and do not cut on your countertop. So other items that I like to talk about, unless somebody calls in. Well, I see we have another phone call today. Rich, welcome to the A. Henny Man's Haven radio studio. How may I assist you today?
Simple question. I think the vertical strip of wood or whatever material separating the vertical window panes is called a mullion. What's the horizontal strip referred to as called?
Well, I think in that case it's probably referred to the same thing because it's an interior design in order to develop the panes or the lights, as we call them. When we talk about cabinetry or we talk about doors, household doors, we talk about the vertical portions of the framework as stiles. That's S-T-I-L-E-S. And then we talk about the horizontal portion as rails, R-A-I-L-S. Sort of like the rails, or of course on a ladder we call them rungs.
Right.
But rail would be the horizontal portion, and stiles would be the a vertical portion. But when it comes to doors and the interior presentation or the windows, I've often heard those just called as mullions, and I really don't know where the definition of the word came from that standpoint. So.
All right. Well, great. Thanks for clearing that up for me. I make a lot of sawdust, so I'm an amateur wood butcher, so I was just kind of curious on that. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, join the field of wood butcher making sawdust. The amount of sawdust that we generated in our mill shop, we obviously have to spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes every day sweeping up the dust and getting it out of the way. Let alone when we do a lot of cutting, everybody is wearing a mask, and we have the blowers going to try to blow it out, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of sawdust around, a lot of other places. That also makes a pretty good mulch, by the way.
Right.
Save it up and develop with your composting or whatever it happens to be from that standpoint. So appreciate the phone call very much, Rich.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a nice week. That opens up a line for you on AM 1030 on frequency or telephone phone call number for a live line at 520-790-2040. We're coming to the conclusion of our third segment here, and we might as well close out at this one, and we'll get in talking about a few other things right after the break. So, Kent, have fun. Here are folks back in the A. Handy Man's Haven Radio Studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. Our live line for any conversation today, like several listeners have done today, is 520-790-2040. A. Henny Man's Haven is located in Tucson. The Tucson phone number is 520-624-7200. Our Green Valley location phone number is 520-369-4858. My next conversation is going to be on working with some appliances and other types of activities around the home. All of us would like to know how you can extend the life of your refrigerator. Probably one of the biggest things that needs to occur with a refrigerator is keeping the coils and the fan system free of all dust and dirt on the bottom of the refrigerator. Most refrigerators have all that systems on the lower part of the refrigerator. There are some refrigerators that have them on the upper portion, like the Sub-Zeros and the Vikings, which make it a little more difficult. If you're not adept at getting on your hands and knees or getting a ladder and standing and cleaning a lot of dust off of things, it would be an excellent idea to call your appliance repair person and have them come out and clean your refrigerator. You could take a look at it and see how dirty it is, but the cleaner you can keep that thing over the months or the years, so to speak, the more efficient your refrigerator will be. So you can blow the dust off the coils on the bottom. So what you may want to do is you tape a furnace filter to the intake side of the where the box fan is located. Place it close to the rear of the refrigerator, and then shoot 1 second burst of compressed air into the condenser coil. Allow time between each burst as so the fan can collect the dust cloud from your blowing of the dust, then send it to the back of the refrigerator where there happens to be that filter. Then maybe with a wand next to the dirty section, you can just do some more quick bursts with your flow. So where can you get a blower of that nature? Well, most vacuum cleaners, if you reverse the flow of the, not reverse the flow of the vacuum cleaner, but if you use the back side of it, not the side that obviously sucks in the air, but the one that blows out the exhaust, you can get a system like that that can develop a, what we call a compressed air system or something of that nature. So you don't need to go out and buy a big compressor, but, you can try that and see if that works for you to get your filter all cleaned out. The second item that you're going to want to consider is brush the dust off of the condenser fan blades. If you ever have ceiling fans in your home or any fan blade, as they rotate through the air, they pick up moisture and any dust that's in the air. And believe me, there is dust in the air, especially around Tucson. Anybody that has evaporative coolers or has their windows open periodically seems to find a nice coating of a glaze on all the furniture and everything else. Well, if it's on the furniture, folks, it's going to be in the refrigerators, it's going to be where all the blowers on, it's going to be on your furniture, and et cetera. So brush the dust off the condenser fan blades with an old paintbrush. If you don't have an old paintbrush, you can go down to the dollar store and pick yourself up a brush for a little amount of money, and that will be able to work it. And then with your suction portion of your vacuum, you can suck up all the crud, as it says, with the vacuum cleaner hose. Then clean the excess panel grill and the compressor. So if you keep those items clean, you'll be able to extend the life of your refrigerator, assuming you're not having any water leaks or anything else that may be associated with that. So hopefully that'll help you keep things going from that standpoint. The next item I'd like to talk about are going to be screws. Boy, there are so many different screws available. Is how do you determine the proper screw for the proper job? And that's always a big decision from that standpoint. Screws are made out of all sorts of metal. They've made them out of copper. They make them out of aluminum, out of iron. They galvanize them, zinc coat them, so to speak. In order to protect them, they have various types of threads on them today. There are self-drilling, self-tapping, as they're called. There are fine thread screws. There are coarse thread screws. They have different types of heads. They can use a hex head. They have a Torx or a Phillips or a common slot for the screws. You name it, folks, you'll probably basically be able to find the screws. There are special screws that are labeled for metal when they use metal studding in homes or commercial locations. There are drywall, which normally goes into wood, but they can also go on metal stud, special type of screws. The traditional wood screw normally has to be countersunk, so that requires another little bit tool, so to speak, that fits on your drill to put a conical shape in the wood, that's so the screw becomes countersunk. There are concrete screws. Today, some of them are called tapcons, which is much different than what we used to use in the past years, which were called cut screws. They look like the similar type of screws that were used, or not, I shouldn't say screws, but they were nails in that place that used to use on putting the horseshoes on horses, but there are cut screws or cut nails that were able to be used. There are lag screws. So what basically you need to do is you need to find out what type of look you would like to have in order to determine what type of screw that may need to be used. There are colored screws. Maybe you like to have some black screws as an example, in order to have the head show and give you a look of the old-time furniture making, because back in those days they did not have countersinking equipment. They just had big hex heads on the top of the screws from that standpoint. Next thing I like to talk about is the drawer boxes or the drawer glide systems in your kitchens or any cabinetry that may have drawers attached to it. I can say recently in my own house, I had a drawer that was hanging up and not opening up. And I'd have to jar it left or right in order to take place. So I finally took a look at the side glide, and the screw, which was a countersunk type screw, was backing itself out of the framework of the drawer box, which is made out of wood. And I would have to tighten that back down again in order to allow the drawer to open evenly throughout its process. So one of the things that happens with wood, no matter where you have it, whether it's interior or exterior, it's going to expand and contract. And I do know when it comes in the Tucson location here, shortly it's going to come up, that you may have a household door that doesn't quite want to shut properly. And if you take and grind it down or sand it down at where you get the proper shutting, guess what's going to happen when the relative humidity drops to 1%, 5%, 10%, whatever it happens to be. Being in Tucson, I have seen the relative humidity in the summertime drop below 1. It was actually when I was in school, and it was about 0.8%, which is a non-recordable number at that time period. I don't know what the status of it is today. But any time that you screw into wood or nail into wood, as far as that goes, and I'll talk a little bit about that in the short period of time we have left, is that when you go to reset the screw in, don't get too haphazard. Well, I'm going to tighten that down nice and tight, and we'll make sure it doesn't come back out again. Well, that's probably the worst thing that you can do. And what happens in that case is that you use the term, like we say, we waller out the hole that the screw goes into. I did mention to a professional engineer not too long ago, well, all you have to do when you have a screw that doesn't set in very well is to put some toothpicks in there. He says, well, I says, theoretically that would work, but that's not what a professional engineer would recommend. And we sort of laughed and chuckled about that. But that is one way. If you don't have toothpicks, you can use the old wooden matches or get some sliced pieces of wood when you slice it off with a knife or something. Put some glue on it, insert that in there, wait till it dries, and reset the screw. The common way they do it, whether it's in roofing or whatever it happens to be, is that they use a screw that is larger than the hole is originally planned. There are special type of screws available for using the sheeting or metal roofing or whatever it happened to be when the set screws for the panels have to go into wood. So a very simple way of allowing your drawers to operate properly. Just remember, if you over-tight them and you strip it out, then you're going to have to do something else from that standpoint. They have some special names for some of these larger screws. I can tell you what some of the names are, but I'm not going to necessarily describe the definitions of them. One of them is called an OS-type screw, and I'll let you try to figure out what that name is, what OS stands for. The other one, I'm trying to look it up here right now, as for the size of the screw. No, I can't locate it at the present time. But it is sort of a funny name when it comes to handling items of that nature. So one way of fixing your drawer boxes so they'll operate properly, and it'll make and work real well. The same thing will happen if you have the hinges on your cabinet doors or things of that nature. So be very careful when you're resetting a screw that has been backing out automatically. The other thing I would like to say is that many of the eave boards on the overhangs of homes, they have those eaves that are driven in with nails. And if they're not cement-coated nails or coated nails, in time due to the expansion and contraction, they're going to back out. I've always been of one that when you drive the eave, the mounting systems for the eaves in, you drive them in at an angle, and so the two nails you happen to be used are at opposite angles. And so if the board decides to try to back out or the nails, they're going to be fighting one another and say, nope, I'm not going to let you do it. Folks, we're coming to the end of our program. It's been great being with you on this fine Sunday. We'll see you next week. A Handyman's Haven in the A Handyman's Haven radio station.